weather. And I live in Tennessee. We good? I can't. I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding. I can. I will do my best. Is that better? Okay, good. But as James said, I'm the stewardship pastor here. And I've been at Grace Chapel for 16 years now and have been on staff for 10. My wife, Patty, and my kids and I moved from California back in 1998. And found Grace Chapel in 2000, walked in the doors one Sunday morning, and haven't looked back and haven't been anywhere else. Absolutely love it here. I always say I was born
so
Catholic.
Was I.
You weren't born Catholic, though.
No.
I always say I was born Catholic because there really wasn't a choice. Is there anyone in here that has been Catholic? Okay. A few people. So you know what I'm talking about. I was baptized at a month old, don't remember any of it. It wasn't a conscious decision on my part. And went through 13 years of Catholic school. And the whole time, I was always just questioning. It's like, I really don't understand why I have to talk to a priest to talk to God. There wasn't that free access. And it never really made sense to me. I was an altar boy, I mean, did all of it, and we were at church every Sunday, but I still was just struggling with that fact. Up on the altar, there's a tabernacle, and I always just sit there staring at it going, is God in there? It's like, talk about having him in a box. That's what I felt like. So after high school, my parents had divorced, and I just stopped going to church at that point. A few years later, I met my wife, and she was Free Will Baptist, and that's a bit of a difference. So I went to her church one Sunday and went, what is this? Because growing up, I had no idea there were other religions. I really, honestly, was that ignorant. It was you were Catholic or you were nothing else. That was it. So to walk into the Baptist church and go through, half hour of music and 40 minutes of sermon, I'm like, what just happened? Because in the Catholic Church, it's 45 minutes. You go in, you stand up, you kneel, you stand up, you kneel, you stand up, you sit down, you're out in 45 minutes. There's no preaching, nothing. It's very liturgical. There was a five-minute homily, which was a description of what we just read in the Gospels, and that was it. So very, very different environment. After we got married, we ended up getting married in the Catholic Church to appease my family. But she didn't want to go to my church. I didn't want to go to her church, so we didn't go to church. And it wasn't until my daughter was born a couple years later that we decided to start going to church. Well, we couldn't decide where we wanted to go. So she went to her church, and I went to my church. And we did that for a little while. And then one Sunday morning, we had gone to a worship service. I had gone with her, and the only seats open were in the front row. And we were with her parents. So we sat in the front row, and literally I'm about this far from the worship leader to you, Jeremy. And she was singing to me, like staring at me while singing. I was so uncomfortable. Like I was so uncomfortable that I got up and I left. Oh, wow. Left my wife there with her parents, and I went and sat in the back row of the balcony. And I was just brooding back there. I was like, this isn't right. I don't know what's going on. But as you know, God would have it, he just wrangled with me, wrestled with me during that service, and it happened to be a salvation message that was being preached. They had an altar call, and here I come from the back row of the balcony, and right in front of my wife, and accepted Jesus right there. So, haven't looked back since that time. It was pretty awesome. But we moved out here in 1998 and started going to a little church called Calvary Chapel of Franklin. It was over off Columbia Avenue, and great little fellowship of about 50 or 70 people. Plugged in, absolutely loved it. And then our neighbors invited us to come to Grace Chapel, and I'm like, no, we're good. We love where we're at right now. And so they kept inviting us, and then they invited us to what was like our 4th of July picnic. It was a Sunday in the South picnic. So I'm like, yeah, we can do that. We'll go to church Sunday morning, and we'll go to this on Sunday night, and it'll be great. Well, fell in love with the people. the minute we drove up. It was like everyone was so nice, and I could just feel the Holy Spirit there, even though it wasn't church. And we decided to try Grace Chapel the next week. Well, we came back the next week and just fell in love with it, as so many people do, as we hear. Went back to our church the following week, said, we love you, but God's calling us over here. Like I said, haven't been anywhere since. That was 16 years ago. Absolutely love it here. Love the teaching, love the transparency and the passion and everything about Pastor Steve. And watching Pastor Jonathan grow over 16 years into the incredible worshiper and pastor that he is, it's just been life-changing for us. So I came on staff in 2010 as the small groups pastor. And did that for about 3 years. No, I guess I did that for a year. And then our administrative pastor at the time, who was Ron Klontz, he's still our administrative pastor, lives in Arizona. He moved to Arizona to take care of his parents. And when he did that, I took on his responsibilities here. So I was doing small groups and all of his responsibilities, which is a lot of the administrative stuff. I was doing that for a couple of years, not very well, because I was just underwater. And then a couple years later, we brought in Pastor Myron as the small groups pastor, and I transitioned to stewardship. So as stewardship pastor, I handle all of the finances, the communications, the special events, all of the adult volunteers, and pretty much anything that doesn't fall into men's, women's, or kids' ministry kind of comes my way. And I've got a great team of people that work with me that help make me kind of look good. But just absolutely love being here. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
You were over men's ministry at one time, weren't you?
At one time, yeah.
So you're leaving out stuff.
Sure.
I mean, that's what I was thinking of whenever when I first met you, you were over men's ministry.
Yeah.
What did you do for a living before you came?
I was a sales engineer. So I traveled the country going around and pushing software. Right. And loved it. And I'll get into a little of this, I think, later, possibly.
Why did you move to Franklin from California?
For a job.
Oh.
For that job, specifically.
I was always amazed, and still am, in my mind, 3 out of 4 people that you meet here are from California. It's like, no, don't even ask where you're from, because you know they moved here from California.
I'm from the other California, though. There's like 3 people in here that probably in the church were from Northern California.
Oh, really?
What part?
Sacramento.
Yes, me too. What part?
Carmichael.
I lived in Carmichael for a little bit. Mostly Elk Grove area, though. We'll talk later.
Okay. That's too funny. That's funny.
Who are you?
Well, this... Rick's from Syracuse.
Yeah.
And he has a connection with Syracuse in the back.
Awesome.
She asked him, she goes, you played it, told Rick, she said, you played at our high school reunion or
wow.
High school homecoming, school dances. And she said, what
they
was it?
Rocking.
He said,
with,
what?
With his fro? Did he have the fro back then?
I don't remember being a fro. No, yeah. I think he was using a blow dryer.
Okay.
She said, what was the name of your band then? He goes, Aerosmith. Oh, it was funny.
He's a quick one.
Well, anyway, y'all know who I am. I'll make this brief, but BJ and I met and married in 81. We've been married. How many? That would make us 35 years.
You have to answer it.
We've been married. We've been happily married for 31 years, 35 total. But that's really a joke because they're all happy. There's no lag at all. We met. We were both Baptist. I went to First Baptist of Dothan, Alabama. She went to Webb Baptist, where she was also Miss Webb. But anyway.
Do you want to switch places with me?
Webb. Anyway, the Baptist service that we went to, they got it all done in an hour. Right? You had worship and preaching and fellowship and parking. You got it all done in an hour. If it was way too long, if it was longer than an hour. Yeah. My dad, he came here and he couldn't go to another service here because he said he has restless leg. He developed restless legs while he was in service here, and exactly. That's exactly what it is. But he develops restless legs while he's here. But he can sit there and watch Fox News all day long, no sweat. And I thought, anyway, yeah. But anyway, we married, moved up here, as in up here being North Alabama. We moved to Huntsville in 81. I was with the bank and started going to Whitesburg Baptist Church. And Jimmy Johnson. Anyway, Johnson. It's funny because it's Craig's pastor.
Okay.
Craig went there for a while. Yeah. Craig May. So we go there, and it's a big church, bigger than First Baptist, but it was a much freer church than we'd ever been to. There were people raising their hands in a Baptist church, and I'm thinking, what in the world? Plus, my supervisor at the bank was a deacon there. So, he was able to share with me, and I was one of those guys that I'd had a lull. I didn't have this problem there for several years, but at Whitesburg, just as I am, I felt convicted to go get saved again. You know what I'm saying? Every time you feel like, I need to go up there. I need to go repent again. And that happened. And there's some, I don't know exactly where that comes from, but there's so much unrest and lack of peace when you have that. And that's not God. So I went forward again. And he met me and prayed with me. Of all the people there were about 4,000 people there. And I told him, I said, look, I told him my dilemma. And he said, well, let's go settle it. So we went and found a room. And we prayed. And he said, now, when you leave here, if you're not saved, there's nothing else you can do about it. It's all on God. And I thought, that's good. And that was true. So from that time forward, I never felt convicted that I was not saved when their altar call was made. So that was a huge breakthrough for me. So we left the church. We left Huntsville. We ended up moving back to Dothan after a few years. And, we couldn't go back to the Baptist church. I mean, we could have, but that's not really what we felt like we needed to do. So we wound up going to a church that I had always wanted to go to in high school called First Assembly. But that's because they were the rocking church in town. It was a happening church, and it was the Grace Chapel of Dothan. And so we started going to First Assembly, and really our walk really grew with the Lord during that time, and we enjoyed that. Our children were born there, the two girls, and we wound up later. We helped start a vineyard church after that, and met in our house for 4 months, and back and forth trying to get that thing off the ground. And they're still going now. And I was administrator at a Methodist, loosely affiliated Methodist church for a while, for a year and a half. And it was one of those churches, if you didn't know it was Methodist, if nobody told you it was Methodist, nobody would know because it's not on anything. But it was a charismatic service. It was not a typical Methodist service. But anyway, our daughters went to Belmont, and we had been wanting to move from Dothan for some time, just didn't know where to go, where we wanted to go. There's nowhere around there that we wanted to move to. And wound up coming to visit Franklin because of the girls and loved it. And we both felt like this is where we need, this is it. So we put everything we had on the market, and I thought it would be a couple of years before we could sell everything. And I kid you not, in two months, sold my house for a full price offer in 08. And it was already bad. Got a full price offer. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Sold three big things. 2 months from the time we declared we were going to move up here, We were in a rental house on 96. 2 months, 60 days. I'm like, we lived there 45 years. It's like, what are we doing in Franklin, Tennessee? So it was one of those deals. Yeah, you feel like God put you here, and now you're here to see what it is that He wants you to do, right? So it's been exciting being here. We wound up buying property across the street over here, had no idea what this church was, even if it was a church, we didn't know. And so here we are.
He's got an awful commute. It's terrible.
Well, the walk back home is rough. Coming down here is not so bad. But anyway.
Did you retire or when you moved from Alabama, or you started?
Well, I built utility and heavy equipment trailers for about 10 or 12 years and sold that company in 2005. So, you know, we didn't have to be down there. And I was a contractor for a while, for about 12 years. Then started the manufacturing plant and then sold that in 2005. Oh, another thing, what a great time to sell a company, right before the economy turns off. Yeah. Terrible. But anyway, I felt like God was in all that. And then we moved up here and in 2007 or 2008, I can't remember. If we moved in the rental house in 2007. Anyway, whatever.
Mr. Brown, I respectfully say to me, all those details that you left out because you thought it was going to be too long helps me see your pattern, helps me see how God worked in you. So I would advise you to share those with us.
Like, well, we only have an hour and a half.
Yeah. It's okay because we're sharing what
yeah.
God
well, thank
has
you.
Done in your life.
Thank you.
And you're worshiping and you're loving Him and you basically put your life in His hands.
Well, thank you.
And
thank
it's
you.
Just admirable.
Yeah. If we had more time, we definitely would do that. Otherwise, we'll keep you here through lunch.
Yeah, at some point, we've got to get into stewardship here.
Yeah.
But anyway, I forgot where I was now. But anyway, God's been good. We wound up buying, after we moved up here, we bought a Western store, boot and jean store, in Dothan, where we're from. So we run this boot and jean store from up here, too, and that's nuts. But anyway.
I'm going to ask you about all the boots.
I was, Steve. I love your boots.
Now we know.
Well,
great God stuff. I want to know about your boots.
Yeah. Does he have a closet just for his boots? Yes.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, anyway. All right. That's enough on that.
All right. So what is stewardship?
Yep. What is stewardship? Is that what we're talking about?
That's what we're talking about. People always ask me, what's a stewardship pastor do? It's like, I don't know. Anyway, stewardship, a lot of people think of stewardship as just giving of your finances, and it's so much more than that. It's giving of your time, your talent, your treasure, basically everything God's giving to you, and what are you doing with it? So we're going to spend the majority of our time talking about our treasure, but we're going to definitely talk about time and talent as well. So open up your books. BJ, what page do you know? 53, right here. All right, so we're going to go about the truths about tithing. Number one, what is tithing? Tithe means a tenth or a part, a tenth part. Honor the Lord by giving Him the first part of your income. Number two, what is the difference between a tithe and an offering? A tithe is giving the first tenth of my income. An offering is anything I give in addition to the tithe. What is the purpose of tithing? Number three. Number four, when do I tithe? Should be on a regular basis. And number five, where should I tithe? And that's where I worship. You know, growing up Catholic, I had no idea what tithing was. Didn't know at all. My example of tithing was we would go to church every Sunday. We'd sit in the front row. When the offering came by, my dad would take out his wallet and throw in a 20 in the basket. That's what I thought tithing was. So I get married, and, you know, my wife has been educated on tithing. So we go to church, and basket comes by, and I take out maybe a $5 bill at the time, and throw it in there, and she's like, what is that? I'm like, what? She goes, is that all we're giving? I'm like, yeah. Like, why? We'll talk later. So it wasn't for a few years that we went through a teaching on tithing. I'm like, oh, Really? 10% of my income? I'm supposed to give 10% of my income? And then, so I was giving 10% net because that was 10% of my income. And then I realized it was gross. I'm like, really? So God really had to do some work on me to get my heart right about tithing. But that's a question I get a lot. Is it on gross or is it on net? It's on gross because it's the first part of your income. It's the first tenth of your income. Also, where should I tithe? And I mentioned where I worship. And some people ask me, well, I give to charitable organizations as well. You know, Caleb just had their pledge drive. Like, I give to Caleb and I give to Mercy Ministries and all of this. Does that count as my tithe? It doesn't. A tithe is the first tenth of your income. Anything above that is an offering. So that would be a love offering over to Caleb or to Mercy Ministries or anything like that. Also, I want to talk about just briefly, there are many ways to tithe here. A lot of people get locked up on, I have to give when that bag comes by at church. Well, you don't. The thing is, you need to give as God directs you to give and when God directs you to give. If you give online, that's awesome. It helps me out tremendously because I don't have to process every check that comes through. I'm not complaining. Trust me, not complaining at all. But with a church this large, if everyone were to give by cash or by check, it would take me a day and a half to do the offering. We implemented online giving a few years ago, and it's wonderful. And I get some people saying, well, I like to physically put a check in. I said, why? She goes, because I don't want people to think I'm not giving. Like, giving is not between you and your neighbor and God. It's between you and God. So you're released from that completely.
I always I'll write 7 or 8 checks. I just keep putting them in.
Just so they think. See, when that happens, I think you're not here. It's like, oh, he missed 7 or 8 weeks and he's catching up. So stop doing that. But it's funny. I will get people, people are very, they've got very interesting habits about their tithing because I do have people like that. They'll miss 3 or 4 weeks. They might be going to other churches or what have you, and they will write out a check every single week because that's when they get paid. So they're writing it out and setting it aside. And when they come here, they drop it in. It's great if they want to do that. We're free. However you want to do it, it's fine with us. But you have online, you have texting, you have giving here in person. You can send it into the office. However you want to do it, we take it all. And we give it all. All right. Next is you.
Well, I had just had a pastor that opened my eyes, but he helped me to understand an aspect of giving differently than I had understood it before. And that's, he was one of my great mentors, really. He was the administrator at the First Assembly Church. And I told him one time I was speaking on tithing at the Vineyard Church. And he said, yeah. He goes, okay. And he said, I don't really believe in tithing. I'm like, what? And I was too embarrassed to ask him, what did he really mean by that? But I'm thinking, he was a little quirky enough to, I thought maybe he really does not believe in tithing. But it was a year or so before I ever got back to him and said, what did you mean by that? And he said, well, he goes, yeah, we should give 10% for sure, regularly. He said, but tithing gives a lot of people the impression that everything they have is not God's anyway. And he said, all of your money is the Lord's, to give him as he sees fit. Not just 10%. And I'm thinking, Carrie, for 2 years, I'm thinking, you didn't believe in tithing. And anyway, so that was good. That was good for me to hear at that time. But materialism, I'm jumping down to the bottom. I won't jump. Number one is my stewardship reflects my commitment to discipleship. Just as you excel in everything else in faith, speech, and in knowledge in complete earnestness, see that you also excel in the grace of giving. How often do you ever think about that? Excel in the grace of giving, God says. Giving makes me more godly. And then third, giving draws me closer to God. Where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And then number four, giving is the antidote to materialism. And I added, you know, I believe materialism and sacrificial giving are diabolically opposed. How can you be a sacrificial giver and still be a materialistic person, right? The more I thought about that, the more revelation I felt like I was getting while I was thinking of it. Because you know so many people that are, they're into their stuff. Most of the time, those aren't the same people that are sacrificial givers. You don't want to be that person. You want to be the sacrificial giver. Number five, giving strengthens my faith. You know, how many of you believe, truly believe, that giving is more for you than for the recipient? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like forgiveness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more for you. It's more for the benefit you get from it. Because God doesn't need your money. Don't think that He does. He can do everything He's set out to accomplish, whether you tithe or not. It's for you to be to receive the blessing from it that it's all about.
It's a heart issue.
It is a heart issue. Giving strengthens my faith. How many people have had their faith strengthened by a tithing issue or a giving issue? Oh yeah, share one, a couple, Jim.
I just wanted a burrito. A few years ago, I guess in 2012, is that when it was?
I'm not sure exactly what you're going to talk about.
Just say yes.
So I lost my job. I'm in medical sales, and I've been for many years. And we were pregnant with our third child, and had to have a hip surgery. A lot of different things happened, but so I lost my job. She's been able to be a stay-at-home mom for, 13 years, 14 years. And so the world was just upside down. Couldn't figure out which way was up. And continually through many weird, they're not weird because it's God ways, but God ways that you would not say, how are you taken care of? Mm-hmm. We were consistently taken care of until I got another job. And I was out of work for 5 months, at the real dip of the recession and all that. And it was a continual... Easter was kind of the pinnacle then for us because it just all came into focus that we were so fretting about my job and our money and things like that, and continually God was providing in a weird way. But then it was just, I think that's the first time, we celebrate Easter every year, obviously, but it was the first time that it just got perspective of saying the tomb is empty and all this other stuff is just garbage. And it's almost like when we had that revelation, it was just, it meant something different for us than it ever had before. But we had been tithing for years in our marriage, and I think it was just him saying, God had it all along.
I can remember, this is something I really struggle with personally. Not because I know I shouldn't do it, it's just hard for me. I like to control, and it is hard for me. It's where Satan can get me and go, if you do that, where's that going to come from? I can remember it really attacked me during that time because I can remember him saying, we are going to continue to give. Mm-hmm. If we do nothing else, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And we did. And I say this just so you can see, because it was a huge faith thing for me. Mm-hmm. Huge. Because we would get down to, he was out for several months and we were going through savings and... I was high-risk pregnancy, so I couldn't go back to work. It was just a mess.
Yeah.
And God had us right where He wanted us. And we would get to the end, and I would start panicking, and I would be like, how are we going to pay this? How are we going to pay this? And, when He says weird ways, it was God way. I won't tell the whole story, but 3 different times, we got a tax check. I still do not know where the refund. I made my daddy check it 3 times. I was like, this cannot be right. Right when we thought we were going to run out. The second time we thought we were going to run out,
we had a hailstorm that hit our cars, and we were not even supposed to be in that place that day, and it did a ridiculous amount of damage, and we got so much money back, and we paid our bills. And then the third time,
we had hail damaged cars. We didn't
get fixed. I mean, we did, but I mean, we paid our bills, and then we had, we have a cabin in Smithville, Tennessee, if you know where that is, this little town, and there was a tornado that went through Smithville, and it went right up the ridge, and it hit nowhere else, but it hit our cabin, and a tree fell on it. Didn't do any damage to the cabin, just hit the deck, and they came out, and they, you know, looked at it, and they said, Ms. Hyatt, we're gonna give you $16,000 for your deck, and that's mm-hmm. excuse me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just that kind of stuff. It was truly manna from heaven. I mean, it was, and it grew my faith so much, because I went, there was no other explanation other than, like, if I told people this story, they'd be like, what?
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a big,
big. Yeah. I'd say that was a pretty good example.
I didn't even understand what you said. No, I did. You know, it's funny because things like that, to me, I can never remember things like that happening when you don't need them. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do, but it's always when you have put it out there and said, God, you know I can't afford this, so here. Whether, you know, and it also applies to your time. A lot of times you feel like, I don't have so many hours in a day, and I've got to get this stuff done. But you go do the volunteer, you do the thing anyway, even with your time, and you watch God do something miraculous with your schedule. But, yeah, God always, real quick, whenever I was 13, my parents were Baptist, and they were J-tithers. They would get $5. And I never thought that's just the way it was. But so when I was 13, I had the little cigar box. You remember the little cigar boxes? And I put my money in it because I had three different little jobs I did when I was when I was 14, delivered papers, delivered Olin Mills pictures, and I washed dishes at a steakhouse. But in the lid of the cigar box, I would write my income down and I'd write my tithe. And I remember seeing that, you know, just, I remember one day just, you know, something, I can't remember anything, but some things I can't forget. And I can't forget the inside of that little cigar box, you know, keeping up with my tithe. And today I'm thinking, why did I do that as a 13-year-old? Why was tithing important to me as a 13-year-old kid? I'm glad it was important to me for whatever reason, because for most of my life I've been unemployed. No, I've been self-employed. And when I was in construction, God always, I was never overwhelmed with work, but I was never out of work. And God just brought me, you know, we built workshops and garages primarily, and we built two a week every week for 12 years. I didn't have 10 to build in a week and couldn't get to them, and I didn't go weeks and weeks with the exception of a little short time that we'd had nothing to do, but the economy was really bad. But God just always, He was always there to give me folks that I needed to work, to give me things that I needed to work with, things that I never needed. Like, we're doing a subdivision, and it's like, I need a dozer. Well, guess what's going to come up today? Somebody's going to call me and say, I've got a dozer I really need to get rid of. It's like, I'm 37. I've never needed a dozer in my life, and you're going to call me the day I need one. And it was, BJ said, you need to start writing a book. And nobody would have read it, but it would have been...
BJ would have.
It would have been good to have written that stuff down. But that's the way God took out... He takes care of us. But anyway, you see now why I can't, that's why we're limited.
We have to rein him in a little bit.
You just have to meet with over coffee.
You know, I'll say this one last, let me go through this verse. Giving is an investment in eternity. Number 6. Giving blesses me in return. It's what we said a while ago. Malachi 3:8. Try me in this, says the Lord of hosts, if he will not open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that would not be big enough to receive it, that there would not be room enough to receive it. It's the only scripture in this where God says, try me. Mm-hmm. Think about that. God is asking you to test me. Mm-hmm. Is that amazing or what? You can't lose, you know, when you're giving sacrificially to the Lord. Mm-hmm. Time after time, you think, God, I cannot afford to do this. And I'll give it back over to Jay with this. You know, the sacrificial thing
don't
at church.
Don't steal my thunder.
What are you?
I'm talking on that next.
You know, the sacrificial thing. I had a figure in mind when we were supposed. Well, how long ago was that?
Which one?
The last big sacrificial offering
that
we did.
In March.
In March. Okay, not quite a year. So I had this figure in mind. As soon as they mentioned it, I'm thinking, okay. But I managed to whittle that way down, you know, to the amount that I wanted to buy something like a major purchase. And I'm thinking, well, if I give that amount, that was sacrificial too. But it was about half what my other figure was. And I felt way much better with that one. And then, so when it came time to give, you know, BJ kept saying, you know, do you have a figure? And you know, God said anything to you about it? And I'm thinking, yeah. I never told her, and then it comes like the day we're supposed to give, and BJ said, do you feel like, how much we're supposed to give? And I said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, I'm wanting to buy this, and I'm thinking if I gave, you know, this amount, you know, that's what I want to do. And she goes, I said, what? What? And she goes, well, okay. And she didn't say much. Yeah, but it's like I knew. It's like, dadgummit.
I know. I got it, too.
And she gives me this amount that is exactly the same figure that I got that I was trying to whittle down from. Mm-hmm. So we gave it. And anyway, I so wish I had never done that. I'm so kidding.
Be just like,
I'll just say this. However many months ago that was, you talking about getting something dropped in your lap? I had a deal dropped in my lap a few months ago, 2.5 times what that gift was. Mm-hmm. 2.5 times, and I didn't have to touch anything. You know, it wasn't a deal where you have to work and work and work to make something happen. It was just a little manna from heaven. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, well, whatever. You thought that was big. You're an idiot. You know, that's what that said to me, you know.
All right, moving down to the next
moving
section.
Down.
How God wants me to give. I have a right attitude. Number one, I give expectantly. Number two, I give willingly. Number three, I give cheerfully. And number four, I give sacrificially. Now, I give cheerfully. It's very hard, Haley. No. It's very hard to receive from God when you are giving your tithes and offerings with closed fists. If you're giving it like that, you have nothing to receive because your hands are closed. If you're giving cheerfully and expectantly and your hands are open, they're open to receive as well. So don't give just to give, because God knows where your heart is, and that's just a slap in the face to Him. Don't give to appease someone else. Don't give to appease your spouse. Don't give to appease your neighbor. You need to give because God's directing you to give. In sacrificial offering, who was not here, show of hands, in March when we did our last sacrificial offering? Okay, good. A good number of you. This church has a huge reputation of sacrificial giving. It goes back to when we first started. Back in 1997, when we were still meeting in Hillsborough School, the school, our pastor had gone to the principal and said, hey, is there anything that you all need? And she said, the principal said, we really need a new playground for our kindergartners to go out at recess. And he said, well, how much is it? And it was like $15,000. And the church was very small at the time, maybe 30 or 40 people. Well, Steve went back and went to the church and said, look, we need to bless them. They're blessing us with this space. And they raised that $15,000 with those few families like that. It was nothing. And they went out and they helped build it and everything. It was great. And then fast forward several years, there were a few different sacrificial offerings that we did. But the one that comes to my mind is in 2004, we had a sacrificial giving conference here led by Pastor James Ryle. And it was called the Resource Revolution. It was a Friday night and a Saturday morning. And there were about 30 families that were at that Resource Revolution. On Friday night, Pastor Ryle spoke about sacrificial giving, what it was all about, and he challenged us. He said, tomorrow, you are going to give sacrificially. I want you to go home tonight. I want you to pray about it. and figure out how much you're going to give. Didn't tell us who we were giving to or what the cause was. You just need to trust in the Lord, and you need to give sacrificially. Sacrificial giving is not just giving as well. It's giving until it hurts. You know, you are giving. It's a sacrifice. That's why it's called sacrificial giving. So my wife and I went home. We prayed, and we prayed separately, as BJ and James did, and we came up with the same number. So we're like, okay, I think that's the Lord. So we decided to give that number. Well, at the end of the night, we went ahead after the teaching of the day on Saturday. We collected the sacrificial offering, and with those 30 families that were in that room, we collected $62,000, not knowing where that money was going to go to. The next morning, on Sunday, we brought in a family who tragically had lost the dad and one of the children in a car accident on the way home from vacation, and found out about them through another church, brought them in, and gave that entire $62,000 to them. We didn't keep a penny of it, just gave it all over to them. It was amazing. From that moment on, from that teaching, I have not looked back on giving at all. Because at that time, we had really given everything we had. I mean, everything that we had. And that next day, on the Monday, I got a brand new job with a new job. It was a promotion with a substantial increase. Got a brand new truck. Later that week, my in-laws, who didn't know that we had gone through this, had loaned us some money for a business that my wife was doing. And she called that Thursday. She goes, you know that money that we'd given you? Forget it. It's paid off. I'm like, what? That far exceeded what we gave. So immediately, we saw a return immediately within 4 days. God blessed us right back because we trusted in him and did what he called us to do. It was amazing. The next year, we did that same offering, same conference. And there were about 50 families in this conference. And with those 50 families, we raised $148,000 in one offering. And the next day we brought in, I don't know if you all remember, but this was right around the Iraq War. Daniel Pearl was a journalist, had his he was beheaded, brought his wife, his widow, and his daughter in, and gave that entire amount over to them, paid for her college because she was getting ready to go into college. I mean, this body of people has just been so obedient to the Lord in listening and under the stewardship of our pastor in sacrificial giving. It's been amazing. Fast forward a couple of years to 2006. When we moved into this building in 2003, it's just the sanctuary and just the remaining rooms right around it, the surrounding rooms. We grew out of it immediately. We were like 400 people when we moved in here in 2003. And by 2005, we were at 1,500 people. I mean, just explosive growth. So we were out of room. So we went to the church at the beginning of the year, 2006, and Pastor Steve laid out the vision and said, look, we need to build. So at the end of the year, we're going to have a sacrificial offering. We're not going to do the whole thermometer thing where we're trying to figure out how much we've raised. We're not going to go out at the advice of some giving experts. We're not going to pamphlet the nice cars in the parking lot, inviting them to dinner, like none of that. So he said, you've got 11 months to prepare. So on Thanksgiving weekend, on that Sunday, we had one offering, and we were believing in $2 million to come in one offering with about 1,500 people at the time that were going here. And that's probably about 400 families when you think about it, 500 families. So we were believing for that, and in that one offering, we collected $2.8 million. Absolutely amazing. Paid for that second building that we had. Fast forward to the building that we're sitting in right here in 2011, and again, it was time to build. We were out of space, and we did the same thing. Good Friday of 2011. The figure we had in mind was $5 million, and in that one offering, we raised $3.8 million. Didn't hit the $5 million, but that's okay because God has continued to bless us incredibly here and bless the people that gave at the time. It's just been amazing. And then we did a recent offering this year to pay off the land that we just purchased. And in that one offering on Good Friday, we raised $2.8 million. So this church is huge in giving. I mean, these are families that have done it over and over and over again because they believe in what God's doing here. It's wonderful to be a part of. And even talking about the blessings that come back to you, I talked about the financial blessings that came back to us. Well, in one of these offerings, my daughter was a cheerleader, and she had cheered her freshman year, didn't make the team sophomore and junior year, and she was just devastated. Well, senior year was coming, and she was going to try out again. And in one of these offerings, we were just talking about it, and she's like, "Dad, how much should I give?" I said, "I can't tell you that. This has to be from the Lord. You need to hear from Him. This is what I would do if I were you." And, I mean, as a high school student, she didn't have a whole lot. She gave everything that she had. And it was like a few weeks later, I can't remember the timing exactly, but she made the team and then was captain of the team. So she came back. I didn't even approach her on this. She came back after that, and she goes, "Dad, you know what? She goes, I think the Lord did this because I gave sacrificially." I'm like, "Yeah, I think you're right. Hallelujah, you get it." But I didn't have to say anything. But He may not bless you financially, but He'll bless you in different ways. Again, if you're doing it with the right heart, the right attitude, and doing as He commands. Yes?
I just want to, I'm not exactly sure how to phrase this, but I think I want to encourage anyone who feels like, I don't want to cry. I do have story after story about how God has provided, very specifically, or provided things that weren't money, like a son that was addicted who's sober and clean for 2.5 years. But I have sometimes allowed the enemy to break me because I've never had a financial breakthrough. Mm-hmm. God has kept me in a place for the last 10 years since I've been single, where I always have to live by faith. Mm-hmm. And it's like that 5-month thing that they went through goes on for like 10 years. Now, there have been times, like after my parents died, I've got some money now. And but a friend reminded me, I just, one day this week, I was just like, I can't do this anymore. It's always so hard. Why does it always have to be so hard? But she said, "Jean, I used you as an example to my brother today about God's provision." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, you know, thank you, but you're not." I said, "I feel like I'm doing something wrong." Mm-hmm. And she said, "I believe that's the enemy."
Yeah.
She said, "Because God has been so faithful," and she said, "I see it very clearly." Mm-hmm. And so even if it's hard and it goes on for years, I would just say, don't allow the enemy to make you think you're doing something wrong.
That's right.
Because, you know, if you watch evangelists on TV, you kind of sometimes think that if you give your tithe, boy, whoo, it's smooth sailing after that.
Yeah.
And it may not be.
No.
But that's all.
Yeah, and just like anything else that we do here, we're under a spiritual attack all the time. The more ground that we try to take for the Lord, the more the enemy's going to come after us. So if we're being obedient to God and doing His will, we've got a spotlight on us. The enemy's going to come after you, but stay steadfast and stay strong and tune His voice out and stay in tune with the Lord. Yeah. Yes.
Guard your heart most effectively from making God a spiritual slot machine. Mm-hmm. Put your offering in, here comes the blessing.
Yeah.
I hear what Jean's saying, but it's that thing of, you want to give with a cheerful heart, open hands, don't care.
Yeah.
Think about pastors in China, you know, and in prison and all. But the enemy keeps up with it.
Yeah.
You're only given to get. You're only given to get.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, personally, I do my best to tune Him out. When I give, I'm not giving from my heart. I'm not giving to expect something in return. And you have to just stay in that place and ignore what He's saying. Because, again, He's going to come after you constantly. Like, I don't know if you realize it, but there, even in this room, there are warring angels going on right now. Even as we speak and we're talking about this, someone is trying to get into your head, and it's one of, you know, Satan's minions just trying to battle with the Lord's angels, and they're doing that battle in this room right now. So it's not just now in an earthly environment, it's happening in the heavenlies as well. So just know that they're out there trying to get into your head, and you just have to put on the armor of God and say, I'm not going to listen to you.
I'm sorry, it confused me when you said, I'm not giving with my heart. Was that, what did you mean?
No. I interrupted myself when I was speaking.
Okay.
I'm giving from my heart for sure, okay. But I'm not giving to expect a blessing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure.
Because
I was going to ask to meet you.
Yeah. After you meet with James, then make an appointment with me. No.
I'm going to keep you accountable.
Yeah. I misspeak all the time, so we might have a long conversation afterwards.
Okay.
Oh, man. Gene, that was good, and I'm glad you shared that. But, you know, your story's not over. You know, so sometimes we think, well, maybe it is, but your story's not over. When you said that, I was reminded of a guy that knew a lady that ran one of the largest soup kitchens in Manhattan. And he said he was talking with her one day, and she said that, I forgot what the question was he asked her, it doesn't matter, but stood out, what has she learned most from her soup kitchen? And her response was, she said, well, you know, and they feed, I don't know how many, I could make up a figure, but it's an incredible amount of people that they feed there. And she goes, you know, in all these years that we've been doing this, she goes, I mingle with the crowd and find out their stories and talk with them. She goes, I cannot tell you how many pastors that we've had, how many teachers, how many church members, and how many deacons, and all these people that are in the soup line. But she goes, not one time have I ever had anybody that said they were a regular tither their whole life, ever. You know, all these other people had all these, you know, titles and had done all this stuff. But she said, not one person, she goes, I ask regularly. She goes, not one time had when I ask, have you been a regular tither your life? She goes, not one person's ever said, yes, I have been. That's incredible. Are you next? Am I next?
Yes. Giving God my treasure.
Oh. Deuteronomy 28:47 says, the Israelites' land and animal production was cursed by their bad attitude by bringing their tithe. So their land and animal production was cursed because they were bringing their tithes with bad attitudes. Well, the flip side of that is, break the curse by bringing your tithes and offerings with a good attitude. Like Jay said, you bring it with a happy heart. Bring it gladly. And God knows your heart. That's the bottom line. God knows who you are and why you're giving and the attitude with which you're giving it. Deuteronomy 28:47. On the giving God my treasure. Ultimately, God is the one who provides me with all that I have. And that, if you walk away with anything today, that would be the thing I'd say. Just realize that God is the one that gives you everything you've got. You can't outgive Him. You're not going to take any of it with you.
Yeah.
My possessions belong to God. He has provided them for me to use as a steward. I make my possessions available for His purpose as they are His tools in my hands. And you know, a lot of y'all are like this, and I want to think that I'm like this. I was amazed to hear a story just recently about some people that had on the mission, you know, had gone out on a mission and realized on the mission that there was a huge lack of something that they needed. And they just didn't have what they needed to work with. And there was a team of them. And so they came back and they petitioned the church because we had money set aside for stuff like that, right? Well, but, you know, it took time to get through the process, and the end result was they wound up, the mission was over, and they had to finish up without all this stuff. And the whole time I'm hearing that, I'm thinking, what are you talking about? Yeah, the church has money set aside for things like that. And there's nothing wrong with tapping into that when the need comes up. There's nothing wrong with it. But whenever I heard that, I thought, why didn't you just buy the stuff you needed? There were so many of you. You had the ability. Why didn't y'all just buy it? I would not have thought twice about just getting whatever we need. If I get back and I can get refunded, great. But it's God's. And what in the world are we talking about? So be that person in your sphere of influence. When the need comes up, be that person that is sensitive to the Holy Spirit and realizing that your money is not your money. It's God's money. If He speaks on you to do something with it, don't be reluctant. Do what it is that you know was God leading you to do. Just do it. Whether you get the money back, whether you get a refund or whatever, is so not the issue, right? Number three, my treasure includes proper care of my body. I can't talk much about that one. Number four. I don't have a lot to share on that one.
Move on.
I pay special attention to those relationships that God partners me with and those that share common vision for kingdom advancement. You know, again, we've talked. You know, your mission field's most likely not in Africa. You said that day. That was so funny. You know, you'd rather move to Africa than have to witness to the people that you work with. And that was funny. But, you know, your mission field most likely are the people that God's given you influence over in your sphere, in your small little sphere. Those are the people that are your mission field, right? Number five, when deciding where and whom to give, I listen to the Holy Spirit and obey. Offerings which are given above the tithe may be given to the poor, to the needs of those in God's family, and to the advancement of God's kingdom and purposes. And then, of course, lastly, giving God my time. Time is a gift. We all have the same amount each day. What do I do with my time? I submit my time to God so that He can order my day of kingdom purposes, for kingdom purposes. Number three, I spend my time based on my values. My values determine my priorities. And number four, God has determined that one day in seven is to be the Sabbath. You know, two things that you treasure, you don't maybe think about it. Two things that are most valuable to you is your time and your money, right? And they're probably the two least stewarded things that we have. We're the poorest stewards of both of those, and yet they're two of the most valuable things that God gives us, our time and our money. There's 168 hours in a week. If we apply the tithe rule to that, we should be giving 16.8 hours to God. The average Christian spends about 2 hours, which is about 1%. If we consider that we should tithe our time as well as our money. And we've talked about that some. So.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, think about where your time goes throughout the week. Is it sitting in front of the TV? Is it carting your kids around to sports? Whatever it is. Are you in devotions? Are you in small groups? I mean, all of these things that you should be giving to the Lord as well. I mean, if we were to give Him back 10% of our time, just 10%, I would say a lot of us are falling very short of that. You all aren't, because you're in this room, so you just made up 2 hours right there. But so think about that. Examine, you know, where your time goes and see where you can give more of it to the Lord. Yes.
Serving others today, mm-hmm. And this is such a beautiful day to be serving others. And I thought, you know, if we didn't have so much stuff, if we wouldn't have all that stuff to take care of, then you wouldn't have the time to go out and do. So, was that Satan coming at me, or is that God speaking to me? You know, I'm just like, am I feeling guilty for doing this? I mean, why can't I just enjoy the day? I always feel like there's just something coming at me.
I can't answer who that was.
No. Hey, I'll tell you what. I walked out on the porch last night because it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Everybody had gone to sleep, and I walked out on the porch. And my view is just incredible because I look out over the whole valley. As I walked down on the porch, I had the exact same thought you did. It's like, this is a lot of crap to have to keep up with. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just a lot of stuff. Yeah. Just the more stuff you have, the more there is to do, and the more you've got to fix, and the more, just, it seems like it never goes on. So, you know, maybe God's telling us. I mean, maybe not today, you have to downsize, but, you know.
I don't think it would have been Satan urging you to go serve somewhere, you know. Yeah. So it might have been God just nudging you, saying, and maybe not right at that moment.
Yeah.
Just saying, hey, where can you serve?
Yeah.
You know, and it might not be right now. It might be, you know, a couple months from now. When you go through steps, are you serving at the church? Not yet, but maybe when you go through these, you think of what God has gifted you with and where you can apply that to benefit the body.
I'm reminded of Abraham, and we know him, of course, as the father of faith in the scriptures, and all that God gave him. Mm-hmm. And when he looked out, those thoughts may have come, but he's the father of faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would encourage you to challenge. You know, God doesn't say this in Malachi, but I just don't believe that he's got the God that would think any otherwise. Challenge him with your time, just like you would your money. And when you think you have something to come up that you feel like you need to do that for you would be a real sacrificial time offering, that you would do it. And just, I'd love to hear, you know, if that time wound up being wasted or if God just abundantly of blessing you with more time in the week to get other stuff done. You got, I dare say, you're going to get your stuff done anyway. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
That's one thing that I pray regularly is, God, please supernaturally expand my time. Like, help me to be more impactful for the kingdom. Help me to get this done in a more efficient way, whatever it is, to be able to accomplish his purpose.
I used to travel quite a bit for work, and you see a lot of, and it was in Florida where the climate's warmer, and you see more people out. You see them here, two people out begging, you know, and they've got a son who's out of work, or they've got their wife and their kids and their dog with them, and that kind of thing. And I get very conflicted about that. I don't know what's the right thing to do, and you hear stories about, well, when they get done, they roll everything up and drive away in their Mercedes. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I really am, and I just would like to hear others' thoughts or yours, anybody, about those kind of things, and where you fall on that.
Yeah. I can tell you personally, I never have cash with me. I never do. But when I do, and I see someone, I do ask the Lord, like, Lord, is this valid? Does this person need? And if I feel there's a yes, then I will give. So I know there are a lot of people out there that are maybe con artists that are doing it, but I just try to listen from the Lord and ask for his advice and his leading and not get in his way. And if he wants me to bless that person, I will.
I know my stepson once, Sharon told me that he was in out by the state capitol down in that thing, and he ran into a guy down there. And the farmer's market, thank you. And he took him and bought him something to eat, you know, rather than just giving him money.
Exactly.
You know, something like that. But I am conflicted.
He's had that happen two or three times where he'd go somewhere and somebody would say, can you give me money? I'm hungry.
Yeah.
He said, well, I won't give you money, but I'll
just
go in here and I'll buy you.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden, sometimes their hunger goes away.
Yeah.
I've had that happen more than once.
I mean, I bought gas for someone at a gas station so not giving them money, but actually just helping them out that way. Okay, go ahead.
I thought you were quick.
Go ahead.
Rise for it or whatnot. But I've had lots of times when I felt like I felt
move to give. And I ask myself, you know, is this person going to do the right thing with it? And then I just try to think, you know, who am I to judge what they're going to do with it? And maybe they are a kind artist, or maybe they are, you know, not really in need. But maybe that blessing that you're giving to them is more than just money or financial, and more of a touch from the Lord that is going to change their heart. And maybe that's the one thing that they need. They see you're giving them money, but they also feel convicted from your giving, and they think, what am I doing with my life? You know, maybe this is the wrong thing. And that just might be, you might be blessing them in a way you don't even know.
Yeah.
More than money.
Yeah.
Even if they don't.
Yeah, that's great input.
Well, the word says, you know, when you give to the poor, you're giving unto me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of helped me straighten out some of my bad thinking. Because you don't know. And that all relies back to discernment. You know, just knowing that the Holy Spirit, that you can test the Spirit and God, tell me, you know, what should I do here? Sometimes it's yay, sometimes it's no. No, you know, so it's just relying on the Holy Spirit to give you the discernment to know when, you know, when those times are right. And, and you know, the bottom line is they're probably not rich. They probably are still poor. So
yeah, we're going to break up into small groups here in just a few minutes. So why don't you save the comments that you have right now, bring them up in your small groups,
yeah,
and we can talk at the end a little bit more because we've got a little bit more to get through.
Yeah, let's do it.
Next section, giving God my talents. Number one, God has uniquely created me and given me various talents, abilities, and giftings for His glory. Number two, I ask myself, what are the natural abilities God has given me? What are my acquired skills? And then number three, I'm a steward who one day will give an account of how I've used what God has given me. Now, I work at the church. You know, everything I do on a daily basis is for the Lord. I'm kind of in this protective little bubble a lot of times because I'm here on the campus. But I like to use the example of what God has given me outside of my talents here at work. And He has given me the passion and the gifting to play volleyball. I've played this my entire life. Absolutely love it. When I'm not with my family or here at the church, I am on the volleyball court. And before I was saved, I was not the most gracious sport, you know. I may have had colorful language when I was playing. I was that guy. Think of John McEnroe. Anyway, so as God transformed me and transformed my life, people started noticing that on the volleyball court. Because a lot of people like that are, at least in the community out here in Nashville, are kind of that same way. And so as I was playing, they were like, there's something different. What is it? I was like, oh, let me tell you. And it was an opportunity for me to share my faith. And there are often times when I'll see someone walk in the gym and you can just see there's something on them. And I'll pull them aside and I'll pray for them right there. Not ashamed to do that whatsoever. And as a result of doing that and me being a testimony out on the court, there are several people in this church that are here because of playing volleyball. So God has given each of you something as well that you're good at, whether it's crafting or whether it's a talent at your job. And it gives you a platform to be able to speak to people. So think about using that. It's a great tool. It doesn't have to be in a Bible study. It doesn't have to be here at church. It can be in the grocery line at the store, you know, just a mom having a bad day and with some kids, and just pray a blessing over them. You know, you might have the gift of encouragement. Use that out there for the Lord. So think about how God has gifted you and how you can go out and use that for His glory. So that's your assignment this week. I'm going to check in. You're hosting this class. So next week, you check with every person when they walk in this door. How did God use you this week in the natural gifts and talents that He's given you?
So. Good. Well, look, let's break into we're still pretty good on time. Let's break into small groups. And I challenge you again, try to keep it with four or five people.